Welcome to the latest edition of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast. My name is Ben.
And I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
We are coming to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And today we are going to be talking about... We had to bring this topic up.
We've brought this topic up a lot of times, actually.
I know, but we decided to, like, we're going to take it on and see how it goes. Genetically modified fish. We are going to make some people angry.
And I think this is the point where we need to make the distinction. We are not talking about physically modified fish where they're tattooed, dyed, like...
Yeah, because we all say those are bad.
Yep, yeah, we should probably talk about it a little bit at the top so that we don't have to mention it again.
Yeah.
Do not inject a fish with anything that's not a medication.
Yeah.
Like, don't tattoo a fish. Don't put dye in it. There are plenty of beautiful fish that you don't need to do that with. We can say that up front as a blanket statement and not need to discuss that anymore.
I have...
Fish feel pain. Fish we don't pain. Need to do that to them.
Yeah. I have specifically told wholesalers I'm not going to buy fish from you because you have tattooed fish on your list. Okay, addressed? Covered?
Yep.
All right, so we are talking about those fish that somehow have been genetically modified, and I think we can categorize those fish that are hybrids, intentional hybrids, fish that are bred for some very specific genetic trait, i.e., long fins, and fish that have been created in a lab, i.e., glowfish, right? There's kind of some distinguishing features about those.
Yeah, this is kind of fun to me because, like, beyond the like the ethics of fish that just don't function well, that are bred to be, you know, poorly adapted to their habitats, I feel like I kind of don't have a dog in this fight. So I'm here just to sort of learn and to see where you guys get your opinions from, because to me, a lot of this just is a matter of taste, not a matter necessarily of ethics. I'm excited to get into it for that reasons, because I don't have that strong of feelings about that yet.
You know, it's the pause is intentional sometimes. I keep trying to figure out. I keep trying to come up with the, this is why you should do it.
Right.
I can't. I haven't yet. I hope I'm gonna.
Charles is awfully quiet over there.
He's chomping at the bit over there.
So I think this topic is one where it's both something I care a lot about, but I have, in some cases, especially with hybrids, and we'll get to that, I have a very nuanced opinion on. It's just, it's hard to generalize the entire hobby when you're looking at one topic like that.
Sure. I think the one thing we can all agree on is that it's not a black and white subject.
Absolutely.
Except for the exceptions that we already mentioned, because if it's black and white, then there's no reason to talk about it.
But, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But this is not. So, all right,
so we're going to encourage the debate here, and these are just our opinions. You know, hopefully hopefully you guys listening out there will take this lightly. That's how we're going to try to address it. If you love your balloon molly, and we say things that aren't complimentary about balloon mollies, please don't be offended. It's just our opinion.
Yeah.
If you love your fish, keep on loving that fish.
And there's a reason they exist, and it's because people love them. So we are trying to be sensitive to that.
A little sensitive.
Even if we disagree, and disagree strongly in some cases.
I might get a little insensitive, just saying.
That is something that does happen, though, where a lot of more experienced fish keepers kind of act as like gatekeepers to new hobbyists that are more casual and like these types of organisms. And I think that it's a little misplaced. Like, it's okay. In my head, I have specific lines where I'm like, I don't like this kind of fish, but that doesn't mean I need to make someone else feel bad for liking it. You know,
that's kind of what we're going to try and answer today is, I don't like this fish. Why?
Right? Yeah.
I don't like tattooed fish. Not just because I think they're ugly,
they
but because
ugly.
It's a really mean thing to do to a fish.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. But when we talk about a balloon molly, versus a tattooed Molly that gets a little muddier.
Yeah. Yeah. The balloon Molly doesn't have as good of an ability to swim, but that need an ability to swim in the wild is so that it can get away from predators. Even if you keep healthy, good, normal wild type mollies in your tank with predators, they're going to get them.
Right, right.
So
it doesn't make them less likely to survive. It just makes their lives that much more difficult.
Yeah. So let's address these from where we started, right? So hybrids bred for certain unique
aesthetics.
Traits. We'll go with unique traits.
Yeah.
And scientifically created like a glowfish, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with hybrids.
So this is one that I want to jump in on. This
Excellent.
Is the one that I have the most to say on. I consistently tell people that hybrids are both my intense fascination and bane in the hobby. Because hybrids are a natural part of evolution. It's actually referred, there are a couple different ways of quantifying it, but you're most often referred to it as reticulate evolution. And it's basically the idea that there are a couple different ways that can happen with it. It's basically different lineages of organisms that are hybridizing with each other and producing new lineages from that. So some ways you can get that is hybrid speciation. And a great example of that is the Clymene dolphin is originally started off like 500,000 years ago as a hybrid between spinners and striped dolphins, but they just became their own thing now. And then the other type is called interbreeding, which you're often quantifying called introgression. So ancient hominins had a lot of introgression. So like in different
hominins
parts...
Hominins are people.
Yeah. In different parts of Asia and Europe...
I thought they were words that looked the same but sounded different.
Yeah. But like different parts of the world, different species of hominins have interbred with humans, like Homo sapiens, so that you get distinct genetic lineages in different parts of the world because of time and place different. So like Neanderthal DNA is pretty common throughout.
Do you have fish examples?
Yes. So a great example of that would be, I'm going to try and pronounce this right. So Amphiprion leucocranos. So it's a type of clownfish. It's the white bonnet clownfish.
Mm-hmm.
It is a naturally occurring hybrid between Chrysopteryx and the Sandarocenos, which is the orange skunk clownfish. I'm not convinced that it functions as its own species because most of the ones we find seem to be within like 4 or 5 generations of being hybridized.
Okay, so I'm going to back up just for a minute. Just for us neophytes here, the scientific definition of a species has changed about 1,100 times over the past 100 years.
Yes.
Currently, that definition could loosely be described or specifically be described as what?
Right now, the scientific community is arguing very hard about it.
Again.
Because... where do you draw the line between it's just polymorphism and within a population where it's just genetic diversity between groups that haven't interbred in a wild, or it's distinct enough now to be a species, or is it a subspecies, or is it...
And the act of describing a species is, while not like arbitrary, it's still... There is a little bit of opinion often that goes into that. So,
thus
while
the lumpers
you can,
and the splitters.
While you can track the genetics plainly, oftentimes when humans get involved in categorizing those things, it's less plain.
Yeah. Historically, species were basically delineated by can they produce fertile hybrids?
Fertile offspring
or hybrids. If they can't produce a fertile hybrid, then maybe it's not a hybrid.
Lake Malawi kind of blows that whole thing out of the water because
yep.
just about any cichlid from Lake Malawi can breed and probably will breed with any other species of cichlid from Lake Malawi and produce young that can also can produce young that can also reproduce.
Which is funny because I feel like that's the area that gets the most hobbyist debate going, is that the hybridization of Lake Malawi cichlids. And that's like, that's the one that, well, that's just what they do there often. But that's the only subject that I've really ever had brought up to me by like a customer in the store or stuff like that on hybridization.
They do it in tanks regularly. They don't hybridize in the lake.
Not at all?
Yeah. Occasionally, right?
Right. Yeah.
But I'm sure they do to some degree, but they're in captivity in the wild are two different selective pressures.
Right. Sure.
So there are specific rates of hybridization and speciation and reproduction in the wild. Captive life doesn't fit those molds, so you're throwing all that out the window.
Sure.
But that's where, I guess this is a great transition into, but that's why hybrids are also my bane, because they're very fascinating in the wild, but then I get a little cautious about doing them in captivity, because captive breeding already has a small population. Mm-hmm. And when you start hybridizing, you are literally erasing genetic diversity in the captive population. Because, think about it, if you're breeding species X with species Y, their offspring are going to have half of the genetics of one species or the other. That means within the realm of that family, you just erased half of species Y's genetics and half of species X genetics out of the captive population.
Very true. Very true. So while we get into this topic, we should talk about some common examples in the hobby that are regularly accepted as this fish.
Well, the obi peacock, if we're talking about Malawi cichlids, which people consider to be a fish, and there's no true obi peacock, right? Like,
right.
There's
that's
no such thing as that.
That's a hybrid. That's a hybrid of one of the species of Alanacaras and one of the species of Umbuna, or rock-dwelling cichlids, that has that obi pattern. Often it's a Phyllobornae, but not necessarily. The female Phyllobornae has the obi pattern naturally.
Right.
There's a couple of others that have that OB pattern naturally, but the peacock is a hybrid of those species.
What we call Betta splendens should not be called Betta splendens.
Right.
So what we...
That thing's just a Frankenstein anyway.
Yeah, the domesticated strain of Betta now consists of Betta splendens, Betta umbellus, Betta smeridina, and if you're messing with some of the dragon scale varieties, you are also getting some Mahiganthus in there too.
Well, that's probably one that people like, this is a one that's a little more likely to actually offend people, I think. But like that is a Frankenstein like creation of captive breeding, right? Between the hybridization and selecting for aggression, and then after selecting for aggression, selecting for prettiness, and now we just have this sort of like conglomerate of a fish that has this reputation as being super aggressive, but now more often is bred ornamentally, and it's just sort of a mishmash of, we tried to make something and this is what we ended up with.
And everybody still calls it Betta splendens.
Yeah.
Like it's a thing. The same
calls
thing.
Calls it the Betta.
The Betta, right. The same thing happens with Xiphophorus helleri, Xiphophorus maculatus, and Xiphophorus variatus.
Swordtails and platies.
Swordtails and platies. So the variatus platy and the maculatus platy are often talked about as being two distinct different species. They are naturally. The ones that we keep in the hobby, all three of those have probably been combined with Xiphophorus elversi and a couple of other Xiphophorus species to make those sunset platies and red wag platies. And the red wag sword and the red wag platy have a very, very similar lineage and very, very similar hybridization that happens.
And at this point, the only distinction between them is cosmetic, I think, right?
Well, there's a little more going on there. But
if you're just seeing it in a store and don't know the actual history of the fish...
Right.
A swordtail is a swordtail because it looks like a swordtail, and a platy is a platy because it looks
and
like a platy.
A female swordtail and a female platy, it's the same darn fish.
Right.
With some of those, it actually is the same fish.
But they're pretty.
This is true. In the saltwater hobby, I know I've harped on this before, but the black Oscillaris is almost definitely a hybrid in my mind because we've hybridized orange Oscillaris with black Oscillaris to produce black snowflakes, and now what's just a standard black Ocellaris. I'm making air quotes even though no one can see me. Are probably just black snowflakes that don't have the black snowflake gene. Like they're the siblings of black snowflakes.
Mm-hmm. So we're all kind of dancing around this one hybrid that's very popular right now. That is, for me, was the catalyst for this conversation. The catalyst for the controversy of hybrids.
And it's hard for me not to see it as a monstrosity almost.
Right, right. We're talking about the flower horn, mm-hmm. right? The flower horn has turned in, the flower horn is a hybrid. It probably has a Midas cichlid in it, and it probably has, there's two other species of fish that are probably
something blue, yeah. whatever. Yeah. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, that kind of thing.
Right. The flower horns have gotten a cult following.
Yeah.
And some of them are absolutely gorgeous, majestic.
It's a social media thing to me.
I used that word. I called them an abomination. There, I just pissed them off. This one. Click.
No, but I totally get the appeal. It's just, you know, because they're really charismatic, they're really personable, and they're really beautiful. So I don't know that most of the people who see a picture and like it know the history of the fish. Mm-hmm. It's just a fish that exists. And to me, it all goes back to breeding ethics for flower horns, particularly because most of the ones you see are not good. They don't look like the ones online. Like in real life, I've rarely seen a flower horn that looks as amazing as, you know, the few people who get really popular for having a really cool, really healthy one. They're often, more often than not, not super healthy because people are trying to breed something that doesn't exist, if that makes sense.
Going for a
as fast as
and
possible. Fast as possible without that much care towards breeding, at least from what I've seen.
Right.
Except for the few breeders who do a really, really, really good job at making fish that are pretty healthy.
I think where the debate goes. All right, so here's my opinion. And it is just my opinion. And in reality, I have kept some beautiful Maculatus platies that I thought were great, and I would keep them again. I don't like flower horns, and I don't know why. I keep trying to come up with this really good reason why I can say, you shouldn't keep flower horns, they're bad, because. And I can't, simply because I would have to say the same thing about sunset platies and red wag swords.
Yeah, and to me,
and Betta Splendens.
It brings me back to my point at the beginning, which most of this is a matter of taste to me, not a matter of ethics. And breeding a healthy flower horn, I don't know that I could say is objectively wrong, but I still don't want it.
For me, I think it's a matter of aesthetics and ethics.
Mm-hmm.
For me, wild genetic diversity is always more appealing. So I care about things like provenance, where it comes from, how many generations has it been bred. And so a lot of hybrids in the hobby don't appeal to me because there is a lack of transparency of what it is, where it came from, what's happening. Like you mentioned the flower horn, and it probably has XYZ in it. We don't know that for sure because the original breeder who produced them has never released that information, and that bothers me. I don't really buy into this, like, the hobby should be proprietary like that. It just,
there's something weird about, like, basically trademarking a living organism to me.
Hold that thought, because
yeah,
that's,
I'm
a
gonna
good
get
transition.
Back to it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay, so flower horn versus parrot cichlid.
Well, that's what I was actually just thinking. Yeah. Is I'm surprised you brought that up before the parrot cichlid, because I
tried to bring up the one that's actually beautiful instead of the one that looks silly.
Yeah, and most people are buying parrot cichlids for their dumb faces, which are kind of cute. I'll give them that.
Yeah. I will say I do not like parrot cichlids specifically. Any sort of like balloon fish, that's a result of their missing vertebrae. And that just, I'm not a fish, but when I think about what my life would be like if I'm missing two or three vertebrae, I just imagine it would be
uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so I just, it's hard for me to say that it's okay to do that with another living organism.
Yeah. You kind of touch on a really good part of the topic here, right? We can't ask the fish.
Right.
Are you uncomfortable looking that ridiculous?
Are you ashamed of yourself?
That's something that I joke with my wife a lot about. I was like, my hobby would be so much easier if I could ask a fish what it wants.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Hybrids. What else do we got to say about them? I think we've touched on it, but we haven't. So when I was doing the research for this talk, I was looking for that reason to not like them. There's one reason that I could come up with to not like them, and that's if they're not labeled. If it's a flower horn, and we all know it's a flower horn, fine.
Yeah.
But if someone's producing a fish and it's not being labeled as a hybrid,
right,
that's going to end up in a group of fish with other fish.
It's the snowball effect.
It is, yes. And the challenge happens with mixed African cichlid tanks constantly, because they just go and do it with whoever they can find. And they're going to come up with all kinds of the hybrids from that situation. Most of them are going to be boring brown ones, so they're not going to get spread around the hobby. But I have gone into stores on a number of occasions, particularly big box stores, but certainly not exclusively.
Right.
And their tank of mixed umbuna, as they're called,
are mixed.
Right. And someone who's unsuspecting is going to buy their yellow one and think it's a yellow lab, and breed it with another one they think is yellow lab, and sell that to somebody else. And all of a sudden, we're going to end up with a strain of yellow labs that really isn't yellow labs.
That's something that's hard to me about this, because it's hard for me to pass judgment on somebody who has an umbuna tank and ends up with a hybrid. Like, that's not that person's fault. It's that cascading set of effects that come from that.
I think that's why it's best to, describe how I feel about hybrids. Is I don't really have a problem with hybrids per se. I just wish there was more transparency mm-hmm. when it happens, so that people can make informed decisions on it. Because there are hybrids that I think look cool, but
and we've sold hybrids.
Yeah.
And hybrids are actually a little bit more glorified, I think, as hybrids in the saltwater hobby. I follow some of the news sites that follow saltwater fish or whatever, and pretty much every week there's, this angel X this angel, and it's really, really cool. But, at least they're explaining what species they think that they are, and they're not getting captive bred past that to, some ridiculous level. I don't know.
It's almost like we've got labradoodles versus pound puppies.
Yeah.
And the flower horn being a labradoodle, right? Done on purpose. Pretty much, if you've got a flower horn, you know where it came from, or at least you know it's a hybrid, right? Versus pound puppies, where if you just go to the Humane Society or the animal shelter and you pick out a puppy that's a mutt, that's kind of what some of those cichlids end up with. See, I just went down a scary path there. It's not the fish's fault.
You backed yourself into a corner.
I did. Oh. See, that's the tough. It's a tough conversation to
have an opinion about.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, it's a whole separate population of fish in aquariums as in the wild. Mm-hmm. The likelihood of these fish making their way back to wild populations is incredibly low, I'd say. It's not going to happen. But if those fish become unavailable in the wild and the captive bred ones are all we have, well, now that fish doesn't exist anymore.
We want them to be true.
We want them to be that fish and be preserved the way that they were.
Mm-hmm. And that's why when I mentioned erasing genetic diversity in the captive population, that's what scares me.
Yeah. 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 And so if the first, let's say, royal zebra plecos that came into the hobby, and there was some other hypancestress that somebody thought would be really cool, and that bred into that population, and somebody introduced another one in, even if it's another zebra pleco, it already has that genetics in it. And if that seeped its way into the hobby, that's all we would have. There would be no more L46s. There would be the Royal Zebra Pleco captive variant. So that's the risk with it to me. But do I blame the hobbyists for that? And is that just like alarmism? I don't know.
So in a perfect world, we'd all have species tanks, or at least tanks of fish that couldn't interbreed.
Right.
Right? Which would, by the way, mean the end of the African cichlid display as we know it.
Right.
We're not in a perfect world.
No.
How do we, and
we have hybrids right here, right now, that are for sale, but we would inform people about them. We've got OBs. We've even got a parrot cichlid in the store right now that we're babysitting.
Yeah, but not on purpose.
No, not on purpose. Or we've got common plecos, which are thought to be a hybrid. We don't really know what's in that fish, but that's also by accident.
Side note, we only have common plecos because we rescued them. We don't purposely get common plecos.
Yeah, but maybe it's better to say bristlenose.
Bristlenose is a hybrid.
We have electric blue rams and electric blue acaros. Those are hybrids, right?
Those are hybrids.
I don't know. I don't even know. I've sold so many of those fish. I don't know what they're crossed with.
One of those, so the three electric blue common species is the ram, the Dempsey, and the acara.
Mm-hmm.
One of those has a naturally occurring, and I believe it's the Dempsey, that there is a naturally occurring, although rare, sort of like the maroon clownfish.
It makes sense to me because the wild type Dempsey still has iridescence on it like that, so probably, but those are hybrids, and how many of them have all of us sold?
Plenty.
Plenty. Plenty. Maybe not even with explaining that they're hybrids, because in the mind of the hobby, it's just that fish, but they are hybrids.
So I think the conclusion is we don't like hybrids, but only because we're hypocrites.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll proudly wear that badge.
Yeah.
I really wanted to be able to put my finger on the parrot cichlid is wrong because of X, but the sunset platy is still okay.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.
I wanted you guys to convince me of it. Like, I was waiting.
Right.
I don't know. Charles has got a lot of notes over there, Charles. Yeah. Tell me why I should be against hybrids other than what we've already said.
For me, a lot of it really just boils down to, I really wish the hobby, the way fish breeding worked, was documented very similar to how like orchid breeding is, where like you register when you produce a hybrid. And that does a few different things, because A, that means no one's buying a hybrid orchid without knowing that they have it. But B, if an entire line of hybridization gets lost, you now have a roadmap to recreate it.
Yeah. Yeah. The tiger barb, the bristlenose pleco, the common pleco. I feel like there's one other that
the tiger barb is
somewhere.
Almost a better example of a monstrosity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they turn into jerks. So those are all three examples of fish that we don't know where they came from. The tiger barb you see at most aquarium stores does not exist in the wild. Well, okay, it might now, because there probably were some accidental escapes.
It probably does in Florida.
Yeah, probably in Florida, right.
Yeah.
Although the pacus there would eat it. But that is not a naturally occurring fish. The bristlenose pleco, which is the most common pleco that we use as cleanup crew for a freshwater tank, that fish does not exist in the wild.
We literally label it as ancestrous species because we're like, I don't know what's
in
it.
Well, it is a pleco, so we get a little slack for that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's the kicker with those two is nobody knows exactly where they came from. The flower horn and the parrot cichlid, somebody out there knows. They just don't want to tell anybody.
Or knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody was the first.
Right. Right. The next section. Are we ready for that?
I think so. I think I've said all I can say.
All right. So this is another one that I was conflicted over, because I wanted to not like these even more than I wanted to not like hybrids. But those fish that are bred for certain traits, i.e. balloon trait, long fin trait, And really, if you're going to start addressing those, you have to talk about color variance. For example, angelfish, and go back to mollies and platies. There's a whole other section of...
Breeding for physical characteristics has a historic, terrible history. Breeding for appearance has a historic, terrible history. No matter what area of animal breeding you're in, whether you're talking about purebred dogs, whether you're talking about... Once you decide that what you want is this look at the expense of all else, then you're going to end up with organisms that don't live well.
Right. So the fancy goldfish versus the balloon molly. For some reason, I like one of them, and I don't like the other one. Balloon ram is even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
For me, I've touched on it a little bit already, but that balloon body type, to me, it's a deformed fish. And you're purposely... What's the word I'm looking for? You are purposely making more of it. Like, that's a fish that should have been culled a long time ago. Like, fish... Like, just because it can live in a tank doesn't mean that it should.
So wait, your opinion... Fantail goldfish, yes or no?
Fantail goldfish. It's borderline. I don't really like long tail varieties on fish just because they often look beautiful, but the fish struggles. And it just, there's not really a hard scientific reason of that's bad. It's just, I don't feel comfortable making life harder for another organism.
But the meteor minnow and a longfin betta, beautiful fish. The meteor minnow, by the way, is the other very cool name for the longfin white cloud.
Mm.
And that was one of the first of the longfin varieties to come out in the hobby. It came out in the 50s, I believe.
So the goldfish topic, I almost feel like you had to separate them. Why? It's just about the history to me. Like, you can't go back. Like, you could say a fantail goldfish has probably been around, let's be conservative and say 200 years. That's very conservative.
Very conservative.
So if we're talking about maybe when that started to be developed, 1,000 years, right? We can't turn back and say no more fancy goldfish. We can stop the progression towards more and more disabled fish.
So it's okay because we've already done it?
It's more of that exists now and we have to take care of it. We're not going to kill every fantail goldfish, but some of these new strains that are coming out, which just keep compounding on those disabilities, yes, I will come out against and have in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if it can swim, that's like a new being that we as a human race have installed. That's like saying domestic dogs, yeah, that was wrong. Let's not have that anymore. It's kind of similar.
But we could just stop people from breeding them. Not that we have that power and we're not that blah, blah, blah.
Right, yeah, right.
But in theory, if we're going to say we shouldn't be producing balloon rams.
Right.
Shouldn't we then say stop producing Aranda goldfish?
Perhaps, but I'd rather stop more from happening.
So just because we already have that. See,
it's not totally, a great argument.
I'm totally intentionally just shooting holes in your argument here.
Sure.
Right? I like fancy goldfish, and I think balloon rams are an atrocity. And
yeah.
Horrible. Maybe it's because... Okay, so I'm going to go down a road here and just smack me in the back of the head if this is a bad road, right? Have you ever seen what a wild type goldfish looks like?
Looks like a carp, right?
Yeah, they're pretty boring.
Yeah.
They're pretty boring. A wild type ram is an amazing fish.
Mm.
Maybe is our personal bias based on in our egotistical human mind, we just made that fish better?
That's dangerous.
I know.
Yeah, it's ugly, so it's worthless. It's fine if we torture them.
But that's kind of where we're going with this, right?
It's not where I would like to go, but it is a logical conclusion to the thought.
We kind of improved upon the aesthetics of, was it Casarius erratus? I believe that is the scientific name for a goldfish.
Yeah. Right?
We aesthetically improved upon it. A red cap aranda, as long as it's fen, is that the right word?
Wen.
As long as it's wen, doesn't cover its eyes, is much, much prettier than a brown comet. But a balloon molly, or let's go with the ram, because the ram, the Microgeophagus ramirezi, collected from the wild, is an absolutely gorgeous fish.
Yeah, I think that's a dangerous thought, but it's important because part of why we have an emotional reaction to it is the tragedy of it. Like, what didn't people understand about how cool this fish was before?
Right.
Like, so we can't say that as a goldfish. For a goldfish, because we don't even really have a memory of what it was before. Now it just is.
Right.
But side by side, you can see a wild-caught blue ram and a balloon ram, and the wild-caught one looks better.
It's gorgeous.
So why do it?
For me, I'm generally default to, I don't care so much about the aesthetic quality of an organism. For me, I really value it's in its natural form, because I just think that if it's naturally occurring, to me, it just has more value because it exists, and I think it deserves to exist because it exists.
That means that next time you call a wild type fish boring, I'm totally calling you out.
Yeah. And that's fine. But
I don't think, see, like, I disagree. I respect that, like, perspective, but I think those red neon rosy barbs we have downstairs are pretty cool. And the distinction for me is whether it's bred purely for aesthetics or whether it's bred for health and aesthetics. Because you can have both. It's just slower.
Yeah. I guess that's a good point, because I don't really have a true problem with color morphs per se. It's when you start changing the physical morphology that I start getting a little bit antsy, just because in many cases with color morphs, you're like exaggerating something that already exists in the fish.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just kind of moving the genetics in a specific direction via breeding.
So I'm going to throw something else, another wrench in the gears on this one.
It's too easy on this subject.
It is, I know, right?
You're having too much fun with it.
And it actually will help segue into the next point. So when we're talking about the long fins or the good, I'm not going to use the word good, the selective colors or the selective patterns or the selective body shape, what someone did is they... Let's keep picking on the rams here, right? And somebody said, hey, let's breed these rams. These two, they're a little extra blue. We're gonna work with those two and call those eventually at some point the German blue variety of the ram.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else at some point said, aw, these two guys are deformed. Let's keep them. They bred. That's how the balloon molly and the balloon ram came about. Somebody felt sorry for the deformed ones and kept them.
Yeah.
I opened up another can of worms there.
Culling. I mean...
Culling or is culling a thing? Or, you know, here we've got these fish and, yeah, they were genetically wrong. And instead of destroying them, we gave them... The purpose of living when it comes to a being on this planet is to make more of itself. That's if it doesn't make more of itself, it no longer gets to exist. That's why that drive to reproduce is so big. Those balloon rams were a naturally occurring mutation that in the wild would have gotten plucked off right away.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody said, hey, let's let these guys live to their full potential to reproduce.
Yeah. Well, my counter argument to that is that breeding anything is inherently attempting to play God. So if you're going to accept his power, you better accept the responsibility for it. Yeah. Because the natural order of things eliminates those variables naturally. Eliminates weaker organisms naturally. Right. That's how we end up with organisms that can survive. So if you're going to take it upon yourself, and you should take it as a responsibility, both in the responsibility of keeping your organisms alive, but also the responsibility of keeping them healthy and the population of that healthy. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I consider it, if you are breeding, you have a moral responsibility to be culling mercilessly, because I understand the appeal. Like, you feel bad. You never get over it. I have never gotten over feeling terrible every time I do it. But that's, for me, that's part of the game I'm playing when I'm breeding, because in the wild, two rams in their lifetime would produce two other rams that are capable of replacing them. And so if I get a pair to produce six perfect specimens of the species, I've already done better than Mother Nature. I don't need to produce 200 because I'm a hobbyist breeder. I'm not a commercial breeder. I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it to produce more of what I like. And what I like is these pristine organisms. I don't know how to describe it. Like, they're
you
gorgeous.
You can even just say healthy.
Yeah, like, they're healthy. They're vibrant. And
the peak of what that species should be.
Yeah, behaviorally, I like them being able to do what they would do in the wild, because that's what I like watching in my aquariums. If they can't do that, I feel sad for them.
Now, for those of you who might hear this topic and just, it'll push you to be terrified of breeding fish, because it's not a fun part of it. So anyone who wants to get into casual breeding, anyone who wants a guppy tank, if you don't want to have to do that, then you introduce the element that allows you to avoid it. As in, if you want a colony of guppies and don't want to cull and just want to have a happy tank, add a pair of paradise fish in there. They'll pick off the unhealthy babies for you.
That's true.
That's how nature regulates that kind of thing. So if you don't think that you necessarily have the stomach to cull, then don't produce fish in species tanks at scale. Look at the fish that you can breed in context with other fish, or keep them with fish that, well, if I am able to, like, if I can give that life to something else, if we've got some pike cichlids downstairs, if the life that isn't going to work out can go towards them and their development and them being healthy, to me that helps mitigate the guilt of doing what needs to be done.
It's all kinds of uncomfortable statements, but they are so accurate and so true. The pike cichlids right next to the guppy tank, it's a good place for the pike cichlids.
Will be fully honest. Just last week, I saw a guppy fry with a deformed spine and quickly pulled it out and threw it in with the pike cichlids.
Perfect. Yeah. It's an uncomfortable part of breeding that those of us who get into fish keeping because we love animals have a really hard time with.
But like I said, it never gets easy.
No.
And I don't think it should be easy.
No, but it can be done humanely and is generally better for the health of the species and the colony that you have.
Yes.
Yep. So that gets us to a very good segue into the intentional or non-intentional creation of some particular form of some particular fish, and segues us right into the glowfish.
See, this might be where we turn things around on you a little bit, because I am not anti-glowfish, and I don't think Charles is anti-glowfish.
I'm not any more anti-glowfish than I am anti-captive strains of guppies. To me, they are basically the same thing.
To me, they are basically just tacky, but other than that.
So I'm going to get a little sciencey here just Excellent. Because this is a cool topic to me.
It's fascinating science.
So glowfish are what is classified as a transgenic animal.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's an animal that has the genes from another species spliced into its genome. So I'm assuming everyone at this table has at least heard of the movie Jurassic World. My one complaint about that movie is they refer to it as a genetically engineered hybrid. That does not exist. It's a transgenic organism.
That, Charles, it's just such a, like, that's like the most you thing that you could say. Your only scientific issue with that movie is the term that they used to describe the ridiculous science fiction that took
I
place.
I know. It's just, it's a fun ride movie, but that's the one moment where I'm like, oh, come on. Like,
I love it.
Like, it was just...
He doesn't talk about the weight to lift ratio of a pterodactyl trying to lift a human.
It's already ridiculous. But... Yeah.
Well, that ridiculous is allowed, but get your terms right.
Guys. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's...
That's perfect. That's I love true. That.
I don't disagree.
That's so funny. So get into the science of glowfish, because some people might not know how pretty darn cool that technology is.
I even agree that the science behind it is very cool. And the reasoning behind it, originally, very cool.
Okay, so you know how what the intent was when they started trying to create glowfish was.
Yes, but let's tell everyone.
So the original premise was, let's create an animal that can selectively fluoresce. That's the term for the way it glows. Fluoresce when exposed to pollutants. They could never get the gene to selectively fluoresce, but they got a fish that would just fluoresce.
You mean like they wanted it to light up only when in the presence of a pollutant?
Yes. And that doesn't sound as insanely impossible as a lot of people think it would be, because dinoflagellates, if you're familiar with bioluminescent algae, they do that only when they experience turbulence.
Like the crazy blue stuff that you see on Instagram from people in Jamaica or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the idea that something could selectively bioluminesce or fluoresce due to a specific stimuli, it already exists. They just couldn't get it to do it in the way they wanted it to. So to produce the green glowfish, it has a jellyfish gene spliced in. Every other color that I'm aware of is produced by splicing in a different species of coral gene.
And you mean green and not... Oh, shoot. I wish I could remember the name for their green.
Oh,
we might not be able to say it without
it does
violating
have a
some
TM
trademark.
Behind it. Right. I know one of them is Moonrise Pink.
One of my... I'm not going to call it challenges. Conflicts with this fish. Comes from both a business standpoint and a scientific standpoint. It is illegal for us to buy glowfish, breed them, and sell the offspring.
Yeah, I could probably talk for the full hour on the idea of trademarking an organism. Like, right. I alluded to it a little bit before, but that to me is just, like, how can you legally trademark an organism? Like, an element of life. Like, I don't know. That's just something that kind of creeps me out. It gives me, like, the willies. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it happens in the gardening world all the time.
Yeah.
All of those varieties of plants that you see at a greenhouse, every single one of those has a trademark. And it has a trademark because some company put in a tremendous amount of dollars and resources to produce that. Why should that be different than, say, for example, reusing the Coca-Cola logo? Hey, I'm going to put the ingredients that I know Coca-Cola uses into this glass. It's going to taste just like Coke. I'm going to call it Coke, and I'm going to sell it to you.
Because it's creepy.
Yeah, so I don't really have a problem with glowfish per se, but I do have to agree with Amy. I get a little weirded out when we start making living organisms proprietary.
Yeah, so from a legal standpoint, I couldn't tell you, but I can tell you what, like, I don't know. I can tell you what makes, like, gives me, like, the weird feeling of, like, how can you do that? I understand that that's pretty, I mean, we've got swords that are named after the company that they're, whatever. Like, you know, that is a thing that happens, but like when anybody could have it in their tank, and I have heard of people like breeding bootleg glowfish.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the really amazing things about this
transgenic organism.
Thank you, Charles. Transgenic organism is it breeds true?
Mm-hmm.
If you put a group of glowfish, which glowfish, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is a zebra danio with all that infused DNA stuff in it from phylum Cnidaria.
I think now they have zebra danios, white skirt tetras, probably not black
white
skirt tetras.
Angels. They just came out with a betta.
They have a shark. Oh, I don't remember which shark that is. Yeah. They have a tiger barb.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot. And they do truly fluoresce, which is amazing to see.
It is. Although tacky.
Tacky.
I will say, just as a fun anecdote, so in college, one of the advanced genetic labs that I did not take, but one of my friends took, was they actually had glowfish, and they genetically sampled them. And part of their lab was to figure out what gene had been spliced in from what organism. Oh. And so she managed to walk me through the process of how they separated out that gene and then backlogged it with like a database. And we're like, all right, so this is a coral gene that's from this segment of the genome of this species. And I'm like, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. And they are not injected fish.
Right.
Plenty of people ask me if they are, and they're not. They are not injected. Genuinely, okay, the originals were with whatever that DNA was, probably.
It would have had to have been during like embryonic stage.
Yeah, right. Like,
more of a splice than an injection.
Something has been affected in some way at some point, but the glowfish that are being produced are being bred, not injected. Yeah. The individuals are not, as far as we can know.
I wonder if it's itchy.
Yeah. I have no idea. But we don't sell glowfish here. And to me, it all comes back to there's so many gorgeous natural fish.
The wild ones are so pretty.
You get into fish keeping because you love fish. Why aren't the fish good enough for you?
But I will defend it, though, from the standpoint of I think we need to be careful about gatekeeping the hobby because casual hobbyists are the people who become hardcore hobbyists. Sure. If we guilt people, casual hobbyists, out of the hobby, then we aren't going to have a hobby.
Sure. How many neon tetras did I kill in my goldfish tank when I was 10?
Yeah.
Right? Because I thought they were that pretty. It's what drives a lot of people's interest in it because they saw something that they really want. So that's valuable in that sense. But
we keep going into all these, but, and then we have this silence because we can't put our finger on exactly why there's something wrong with a balloon or a parrot cichlid or a transgenic organism that we just don't like for some reason, that just doesn't fit our definition of what, I don't want to say what looks good because, a glowfish is a pretty cool looking organism.
Yeah.
I just don't want one.
I would describe it as what fits your image of what's a fishy fish.
Yeah.
Like fishy fish.
Yeah. Like that fish is fishy to me and I like it because it's fishy. This fish is less fishy. So I'm
But I also
so
like
into
the way a red caparanda looks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It looks fishy to you.
Yeah. We just can't put our finger on what makes a red caparanda look less fishy than a glowfish or a balloon molly or a longfin white cloud.
Well, so much of it tracks back to aquarium keeping style. And my, you know, Charles's aquarium keeping style is he's a breeder who specializes in organisms that speak to him specifically. And my style is I want to keep my tanks like looking like natural ecosystems that you could have cut it out, even though it's a natural ecosystem that I invented, but like it looks like it could be cut out of an area somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. And glowfish don't fit in that mold to me. Like, so it feels weird because it doesn't fit in my mold. For the people who do, who just want I want the thing in my living room that every time somebody comes over to my house, they're going to do a double take.
Get distracted by go, ooh, what's
yeah.
that?
And glowfish do fit that mold.
They do.
But not the one that I use.
Right, right. So I feel like with this topic, we've resolved nothing.
We've talked a lot.
We've talked a lot. We've talked a lot about what our reasons are for liking or not liking, for accepting or not accepting. We've addressed those, some of those ethical issues and poked holes in most of them and maybe come up with new reasons to like them.
Yeah, I feel like all of my stances have been proven wrong, but I still believe them just as strongly.
I know, me too.
I think that's kind of the point of this discussion, though, where no one here is in the right, no one here is in the wrong, but these discussions are important to have because if we become complacent in the hobby, it's going to be taken away from us, or it's going to disappear.
Keep the discussion open. Okay, let's try something a little fun here, all right? I'm going to rattle off a hybrid or genetically modified fish and say yay or nay, and you have to pick a yay or nay.
Okay.
You have to pick it, okay? Long fin clownfish, Amy.
No.
Long fin white cloud, Charles.
Nay.
Me? Yay.
Yeah.
I like them. I think they're great.
Wait, you like the white clouds or the clownfish?
Long fin white clouds.
But the clownfish?
I messed myself up, didn't I? We need to start
the over.
Yeah. Lost track of where I was there.
So, yay or nay on the long fin clownfish for you?
Nay.
But the white cloud?
Yay.
See, I kind of feel the same way.
And I don't know why. The glow betta, Amy.
No.
Charles.
I'll accept it.
I'm going
it's not
no.
that much different than another betta, but that's my gut instinct.
Glow yeah. Daniel.
Is it, do I think it's wrong or do I want it?
You tell me.
Because I don't think it's wrong, but I don't want it.
Do you like it?
I don't like it.
There you go. Do you like it? A glow Daniel.
Yeah.
No. You guys are all, no. a Picasso clownfish. Amy.
That's fine by me.
Charles.
I like them, but it's a wild polymorphism.
Okay, fine. I'm going to turn it right back around. The platinum clownfish. Oh, by the way, yay for the Picasso for me. Platinum clownfish.
Yes.
It's a double dose of the Picasso gene.
Break him.
But you could come up with that. You can say that about a balloon molly. You could come up with the genetic for a balloon molly or the longfin white cloud or the Uranda.
And you're not wrong. I'm fine with the platinum perk because
I'm standing by. I could throw a big word. So there.
Yeah. No, it's actually kind of cool. I'll just have a quick tangent. Picasso clowns are a naturally occurring polymorphism in the Solomon Islands.
Correct. Veiltail angel, Amy.
Yes.
Charles.
No, but I don't like angels.
I don't have a problem with the veiltail angel. What about a red Marlboro discus, Amy?
Fine by me. They're hardier than their wild counterparts anyway.
That's true, Charles.
Basically the same perspective.
Yeah, me too. We could go on with those for hours.
I know.
So there's no consistency, right? Amy just likes most of them, but then there's some like okay, balloon ram, Amy.
Yeah, no. It's when it gets to the physical deformity that I start to get twitchy about it.
Okay.
And there's a little bit of a gray area in between where that's where the fantail goldfish sits. That's right. Where the Aranda sits. But we start getting into ranchus and I'm like, maybe not. I don't know. And so everybody should have a gray area. Anyone who has black and white opinions is probably wrong.
And right. It's okay to have like a nuanced opinion. Like it's like with Amy and the flower horns, it's like, I don't have a problem with them per se because the ones that are bred to be healthy don't seem to bother you, but most of them aren't bred that way.
No, it's more about taking responsibility for what you make to me than anything.
So what kind of hybrids do you have in your tanks? Tell us why you have them. Tell us what they are. Tell us why you think we should have more of them.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're not sure if something in your tank is a hybrid or not, which you may not know.
True. tell us why we should have less of them. Give me a reason to like the meteor minnow and not like the flower heart. Somebody's got to have a reason out there somewhere. There's got to be something that says, here's the category this fits into. Here's the category this fits into. Maybe it's the taxonomist in me, but I don't know.
Yeah, this is tough for us. We really like to know our own minds. And this is not an easy subject to do that.
No, there's no concrete basis for it that we've found so far.
Not one that's overarching across the entire hobby, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, keep on listening. We will turn this into a fun little YouTube video where we'll paraphrase some of this. Look for our next podcast coming up soon.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on our website, you should be able to leave a comment just right underneath. Otherwise, you can reach out to us on Facebook, email. If you just want to, you know, get our feedback on anything, you can just always reach out.
Or go off on a rant on what we said and
sure.
How terrible of a podcast this is.
I would be interested in reading that.
I would too. Yeah. I want to hear some good constructive criticism. Hopefully we're being constructive as well. Sometimes I'm being just a little bit of a pain in the ass, but I otherwise, let's always keep this fun and keep those hands wet. Thanks for listening.